There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
What is loneliness? Why do we feel it? Why do some people feel lonely when surrounded by people and others never feel lonely at all? At some point in our lives, you or I will feel lonely. It's not the same as being alone, which is fine and often a relief to get away from other people. It's that feeling, and often a physical feeling, of not having anyone to talk to or anyone who understands you. We can be surrounded by people, by friends, by family, colleagues. We can live in a busy city and still feel very lonely. Very isolated. Over half of parents, 52%, have a problem with loneliness, and almost a quarter of them have felt lonely in the last week. For 3.6 million people over the age of 65 in the UK, television is their main form of company. And 50% of people with disabilities will be lonely on any given day. We're here to raise the topic of loneliness and really get this conversation going this afternoon. And we're joined in the studio by Dr. Sabine Scaff, who's a clinical psychologist and co-owner of the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. So she is on hand to answer any of your questions and queries this afternoon. You can text us on 4001 or get in touch using the DubaiEye Messenger app, which is totally free, iOS and Android. So do get in touch, 4001, and you're more than welcome to give us a call as well, 04-423-1010. And of course, you can remain anonymous. We're also recognising this afternoon the sad death of world-renowned physicist Stephen Hawking, who died at the age of 76. Best known for his work with black holes and relativity, Hawking wrote several popular science books, including A Brief History of Time, and was widely hailed as one of the greatest minds 21st century offered to humanity. Over the next 2 hours, we'll be sharing some of his wisdom and insights, and we'd love to hear your thoughts and memories. Get in touch, 4001. And we really love this inspiring speech by Stephen Hawking about his hopes for a better future.
I am very aware of the preciousness of time. Seize the moment. Act now. I have spent my life traveling across the universe, inside my mind. Through theoretical physics, I have sought to answer some of the great questions. But there are other challenges, other big questions which must be answered, and these will also need a new generation who are interested, engaged, and with an understanding of science. How will we feed an ever-growing population? Provide clean water, generate renewable energy, prevent and cure disease, and slow down global climate change. I hope that science and technology will provide the answers to these questions, but it will take people, human beings with knowledge and understanding, to implement these solutions. One of the great revelations of the space age has been the perspective it has given humanity on ourselves. When we see the Earth from space, we see ourselves as a whole. We see the unity, and not the divisions. It is such a simple image. With a compelling message, one planet, one human race. We are here together, and we need to live together, with tolerance and respect. We must become global citizens. I have been enormously privileged, through my work, to be able to contribute to our understanding of the universe. But it would be an empty universe indeed, if it were not for the people I love, and who love me. We are all time travelers, journeying together into the future. But let us work together to make that future a place we want to visit. Be brave, be determined, overcome the odds. It can be done.
That was Stephen Hawking sharing an inspiring speech, One Planet, One Human Race, and a Real Need for Tolerance. We'll be sharing some of our favourite quotes, insights and wisdom from Stephen Hawking through the next couple of hours, and we'd love to hear any memories or quotes that you would like to share as well, 4001. Loneliness is our topic this afternoon on The Couch, and I'm joined by Sabine Scaff, who's the clinical psychologist and co-owner of the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. Good afternoon, Sabine.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. I feel like loneliness is such a taboo topic. I feel like there are so many of us suffer from it, and so few of us admit to it. There's still a real stigma there.
Absolutely, of course, because we feel that if we share our feeling of loneliness, it will make us vulnerable or weak. And this is something we want to, it's not the image that we want to convey to other people. So there's a lot of resistance towards expressing, you know, that need for connection.
So by saying I'm lonely, in some minds people might think, you know, you're not worthy of love or attention, you haven't got friends, you haven't got family.
Yeah, like there's something wrong with you, like you don't know how not to be lonely. So there's a strong stigma geared towards making you feel awkward about it. So and that's why a lot of people are very reticent to share that feeling.
Yet so many people suffer
absolutely
with loneliness.
I mean, we hear this in at our clinic with our own clients, when most of them report a lot of feelings of loneliness while living here as expats.
And I think that's the greatest irony, you know, we're living in a really busy city,
yes,
you know, hundreds of thousands of people, we're leading, you know, dynamic lives, you know, busy at work, very busy at home, kind of melding those lives together. Mm. And yet often so many people are lacking those meaningful connections where they feel like they can be truly open and honest and themselves. And it's not, you can be lonely when you're surrounded by people.
Absolutely. I mean, most of the connections that we make here as expats, I don't want to say are not meaningful, but are not long term. So you don't really invest in them because people come and leave. And you want to come across as being, you know, happy, successful, and so on. So people actually prefer to be on their own than to be around people with whom they have superficial connections. I mean, this is where the loneliness feeling comes from, when you are with colleagues, friends, and so on. Those are not deeply rooted friendships. And this is what we hear from our clients, that yes, we have colleagues, yes, we have plans, our days are full over the weekend, but we still feel that there's something missing, you know. A lot of people don't just focus on romantic relationships, but one of the biggest fears, I'm talking about single people here, that they report is that they're afraid that something's going to happen to them and no one will find them out in their own apartment. I mean, this is one of the biggest fears that is reported.
And it's interesting, I think, if you are single, you often believe that when you get married, you're going to then have your person through life and they're going to be by your side and holding your hand and they're going to be there. But there can also be a huge amount of loneliness in marriage as well. If you haven't got a relationship where you communicate openly or you feel like it's a safe space for you to share your feelings.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, after the honeymoon phase.
How long does the honeymoon phase last to be?
To be optimistic, I think couple of years.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, people grow apart, we marry at different stages of our lives, we both have careers or not, or we're stay-at-home parents, but a lot of people report that they grow but in a parallel way. So they lose some of that connection to their partner. It's not necessarily the way for all couples, but a big portion of couples report that disconnection and their feeling of loneliness.
So go back to real basics. Sabine, you're a clinical psychologist. What is loneliness?
Loneliness is defined as the perceived social isolation. It's basically the discrepancy between what you actually want from your social relationships and what you're getting. So it's in that sense, loneliness is quite subjective. You know, it's not a measurable feeling like all other feelings. But I hear people saying, you know, that my friends are envious of me, of the lifestyle that I lead. I'm traveling. I'm doing very well in my career. I have an amazing position and so on. My salary is amazing. Yet I feel so lonely. And when I talk to them, they do not understand. So it's, again, a subjective experience, and it's the perceived isolation more than anything else.
And talking about perceptions as well, I think it's a very common misconception that it's linked to social awkwardness or being different or kind of separate, really. But actually, a very high volume of very successful
absolutely
and social people feel lonely?
Absolutely. It's, I mean, the feeling of loneliness is not just characteristic of people who struggle with their social skills. You know, a lot of people who have social anxiety disorder or some form of social awkwardness, we may feel that these are the people who will feel lonely the most, but that's not accurate at all. You can be very high functioning with amazing social skills, you know, and still feel very lonely at one point of your life.
We are joined this afternoon by Sabine Scaff, who's a clinical psychologist and the co-owner of the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. If you've got any questions or concerns related to loneliness or any real issues that Sabine could help with this afternoon, please do get in touch. 4001 is the text line. You can get in touch by just giving us a little line, 0443 1010, or via the Dubai iMessenger app. I feel like this is going to be a popular show, and as I said, if you would prefer to remain anonymous, that is absolutely fine. We're talking about the stigma attached to loneliness and how it really is one of the last taboos. We're living in a very competitive, very visual, very active on social media world where personal brand is becoming increasingly important. Mm. We are talking about loneliness this afternoon, a topic that Stephen Hawking actually did talk very openly about, which I think is incredibly interesting. He obviously was suffering with his disability and said that the, you know, motor neuron disease really baffled people. We're joined by Sabine this afternoon, who said people were just too impatient to answer him with his voice synthesizer, and even Nelson Mandela looked kind of completely taken aback when they met. He said in 2013, "At times I get very lonely because people are afraid to talk to me or don't wait for me to write a response." And I think that just goes to show anybody can suffer from loneliness. You know, he's obviously a hugely successful man in his field, surrounded by family, surrounded by his peers, and yet so isolated. So we would like to hear from you this afternoon if you're suffering from loneliness or have any questions, or if maybe there's someone in your life that you're worried about. Could it be a partner or a child? I'm joined this afternoon by Sabine Scaff, who's a clinical psychologist and co-owner of the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. We've had an anonymous message here saying, Sabine, what are the symptoms of loneliness?
Symptoms of loneliness. Well, in itself, loneliness is not a disorder. So the symptoms could vary from person to person. Loneliness is mostly a feeling. I think it's the social withdrawal and being isolated. Even when you reach out, you still feel like you're completely disconnected.
Can it be a physical feeling?
Absolutely. It's a physical feeling like hunger, thirst, all our primal needs could be expressed physically as well. I think it's important to highlight, because this is a question, what are the symptoms of loneliness, is that loneliness does not necessarily mean depression. So depression, one of the symptoms of depression is isolation and withdrawal, but not everyone who is lonely experiences depression. I think this is an important point to clarify.
Now, Charlotte Bronte wrote, "The trouble is not that I am single and likely to stay single, but that I am lonely and likely to stay lonely." We're talking about loneliness this afternoon, one of the biggest social stigmas and something that so many of us suffer from at some point during our lives. We have got a call for you, Sabine. Good afternoon, Kamal.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you doing today?
Well, thank you. How can we help you?
So my question is actually, how do we motivate somebody who's feeling lonely? It's actually my mother's birthday today. She's turning 49 and she feels lonely all the time, right? Though we live in a joint family, we have like kids and grandkids and everybody's there. And she is just not like feeling it, you know, like as I wish her happy birthday today morning, she's like, yeah, whatever, it's just another day kind.
You know? So she's disinterested.
So how do you motivate somebody, like if I tell her that you should go to park or you should, you know, participate in something, she will keep crying about it that she's not participating into anything, but she doesn't want to participate into anything. So how do we motivate somebody in that kind?
Kamal, my question to you is, how long has she been experiencing this loneliness?
I guess about a year or so.
Okay. Was your mom ever a working mom, or was she always a
She wasn't working mom, but as many of us expect, especially from India, you know, my father was here, but she was in India for quite long stretch of time. You know, me and my mom, my brother, we were in India, and my father was working here by himself. So that kind of made an impact, which to my understanding that, you know, staying away from husband for quite some time, you know.
Yes. Do you notice anything other than loneliness, than her feeling of loneliness and her behavior?
Just the sadness, you know, like she wants to, sadness is there, you know, like anything, like she might be having the best of the food that she wants to have, but once she has that food served in her plate, she's like, it's just another food. There is no joy in anything for her.
So she seems to be experiencing a low mood.
Yes, low mood.
I mean, this her feeling of loneliness could be part of something a little bit bigger than loneliness at this stage, especially her, you know, lack of enjoyment of activities that she previously enjoyed. So maybe we're looking at something that is a little bit more. Try to have a talk with her and see, I mean, if she would consider...
I do talk with her, and like she's close to me, so she listens to me mostly, right? Yeah. And she used to write, and she used to do dance and everything back in the days, right?
Yeah. So there's
but
a change in behavior.
But now I tell her to do those things again. She's like, no, I'm just not feeling anything.
Yeah, she's
that's,
not enjoying.
That's the answer I always get.
Yeah, she's not enjoying them anymore. So there's no point in pushing her to do some things that she no longer enjoys. But talk to her about consulting with a mental health professional to see how this person can best help her.
Do you think she'd be receptive to going to a doctor, Kamal?
I don't think so.
Do you think there's anyone that she would listen to if they were to suggest
it? Other than me,
no. maybe it's not about having a conversation. Yes. Maybe if she has written before, maybe you could write her a letter and try and articulate how you're feeling as her son, and someone who clearly is a good son and who cares very deeply about her. Maybe that's would be another way of trying to get through to her.
Maybe you're right. Well, thank you for your time, guys.
Wish her a happy birthday as well, Kamal. I hope there are some celebrations later on.
Definitely, I will. I'm just picking up the cake.
Oh, good. Well, enjoy.
Happy birthday.
Thank you for joining
us.
Thanks. We've got quite a few phone calls coming through and a lot of text messages as well. I'm going to go to another phone call very, very shortly. We have got a message here from another anonymous message, actually, for Sabine, saying, great topic. I'm a mum of three children, aged 10, 7 and 5. All are at school, and I'm a full-time mum. After my husband goes to work and the children are at school, I have a few spare hours and I'm lonely. Shopping malls are draining. I can only go to so many coffee mornings. I work out too, but that's a separate part of my day. Most of my mummy friends work, so I have those hours in the mornings that are repetitive, lonely, and yet busy with supermarkets and stuff.
This is so relatable on so many levels. You know, this is the kind of things we hear from most of our clients who are expat women, expat wives. You know, they report similar feelings and similar kind of concerns. So this lady is raising an important question, because expat life can be quite isolating. I mean,
for a number of reasons.
Yes, yes.
Obviously,
absolutely.
Geographically, we're far from friends and family back home, and that's often this could be our first time of living abroad, and it's a sense of identity shift as well. She's saying she's a full time mum, but her other mummy friends work.
Yes, a lot of women who do the move to Dubai or any other country, a different country, had to give up some of their careers or their studies or you know, their businesses. So it's quite isolating and lonely to come here, cater to everyone's needs in the family besides your own. So, of course, I mean, if your friends are working and you're not, you end up with a few hours a day with nothing to do.
And I think that's very relatable. There are only so many coffee mornings I can go to. And
yes,
you know, certainly
absolutely.
When I was on maternity leave, I'd go to coffee mornings and have very, you know, pleasant conversations with women. But I never felt like it was going to grow into a real friendship. And often with children, you feel like you're really only friends because your children are the same age.
Yes, I mean, this is a feeling that a lot of clients report as well.
So any advice there for our texter?
You know, when I work with women who report similar difficulties, I ask them to find out what they're passionate about, even if it's not something that is bringing them any kind of financial, satisfaction, but just for them to find out what their passion is. It could be reading, it could be writing, it could be anything creative, and do that for a while, because those kinds of activities give you a sense of meaning and purpose that besides, you know, the fact that you're a mother, you're also an individual who's exploring things that belong to you.
And so that finding your passion, something that's yours.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So we do have another caller on the line, Sabine.
Yes.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear us?
Hi. Hello. Yes, actually, I just wanted to say about loneliness. I'm not sure if this coincides with loneliness, but almost 3 years ago, my husband's father passed away. So after that, you know, I've seen such a change in him. I mean, besides being mature and holding responsibility of, you know, losing a father and taking care of the whole family, including his siblings and mother. But I just feel like he's changed as a person, and he's not as talkative, or he doesn't enjoy life, as the previous caller had said. You know, I just feel like he's changed so much. So I'm not sure if he's lonely. He's not as excited about things as he used to be, even though it's been almost 3 years. I don't know if it's, you know, part of loneliness, or is it just a maturity change, or is this how he is now? Is that his new personality? So I'm just so confused about, you know,
yes,
I don't know how to explain
myself. Yes, it is quite confusing. But you see, your husband and his family members have experienced loss, the death of mm-hmm. their father. So this, I think your husband is going through the grieving process, and sometimes it takes years to get over something like of so much significance in a person's life. It doesn't help, you know, that your husband may not be able to share his feelings about the topics, but maybe this is where you feel the sense of him being more lonely and isolated and withdrawn. But it's definitely something, since you notice that the change has come after the passing away of the father, then it's definitely something that has to do with grieving, with more responsibilities, more isolations. Because having this type of burden, I mean, it's a big responsibility on a man to take care of the rest of the family as well.
How have you spoken to him about it?
I mean, I don't really. In the beginning, when his dad passed away, obviously I helped him, you know, the grieving process and everything, but now I just feel like, okay, I don't know what to do anymore.
You don't know how to help.
Yeah,
he plays sports and stuff, so he's like, it helps me get over the stress about work and everything else. So I don't know, like, with me, and like, you know, I feel like he doesn't enjoy life with me as much anymore. I mean, it's not the loss of interest, obviously, I know that, but I just feel like it's the stress level, and he doesn't know how to manage it, so he plays sports to get his mind off things.
Yes,
but I'm just really confused about how to help him.
Yes, I think it's important for you to understand that this has nothing to do with you as a person.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're trying your best, but sometimes people are not responsive because of, you know, their own inability to process these kinds of emotions. So it has nothing to do with something you're doing or you're not doing. I think you have tried your best. And leaving it for a while, for him to process it the way he can, I think is better than trying to, sometimes push but not get back any answer. Because it's clearly very frustrating to you, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel so helpless. That's the word. Yeah,
I know.
I don't know what to do.
Helpless and hopeless.
Help him get back in life, you know, how everything was before, enjoy everything, be more social and stuff like that.
I just feel like he's
more independent now, and I don't know, he just likes to do things on his own.
Yeah, it sounds like you miss him.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I think, you know, the best way to handle it for now, just leave it for a while.
How long's a while? It's been 3 years.
I know. But, you know, people process grief differently. This is the thing. Maybe talk about it with other family members and check
with them. I mean, I do
them.
Notice a change. It's just, I just feel like everything's not as it was before. Maybe it's the more responsibility, the more maturity. Obviously, a person changes because of this. It's a big change in their life. So I don't know, maybe it's just me that can't
accept it as well.
But there's also the because you've been married for some time now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So some of these changes are inherent to marriages, ultimately,
yeah.
and not just, you know, a difficult phase in life. So how long have you been married for?
We've been together for 8 years, almost.
Okay, do you have children?
Yeah, we have two kids.
And is he the same? Is he the same with the children?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, okay. he is, more or less, you know.
Okay, maybe just talk to some family members that are close to him and share your concerns and see what their experience of him is. And maybe they will give you some insight about how to tackle this with him.
And all right, thanks a lot. I'll go about it, but we should, you know, let it all out, I guess.
It sounds like you need some time, he needs some time, but he just needs to know that you're going to be there, and it sounds like he will be.
Yes, definitely. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Wishing you all the best. Thank you. Now, just have a listen to this. This is Florence, who's 95, and she's got a 27-year-old housemate called Alexandra. When Florence's husband died, she said she desperately needed company, and she was one of 9 million adults in the UK who say they are often or always lonely. Florence came across house sharing in the letters page of a newspaper, an initiative that aims to tackle loneliness by matching older people looking for companionship with a younger person in need of somewhere to live.
I'm Florence. I'm 95 years old, partially sighted, and I have a housemate who is 27 years old.
Hi, I'm Alexandra. I'm 27. I'm a student living in London. I moved here in September and didn't know anybody in London, really.
I wanted to do it because I was very lonely and because I think we all need companionship. In a way, it was quite frightening because you don't know... Are you going to fall? Is something going to happen to you? Also, you're bored to tears. You are used to leading an active life, and suddenly there is nothing. My husband had died. I'm a widow. My children had married and gone away. So it's very important to have somebody coming into the house. Somebody to talk to, and instead of sitting here looking at four walls and thinking, what am I going to do now?
I mean, on a completely practical level, it's been important for me as somewhere, a way I can come to London and do my studies. But on the other things that I've got out of it that I wasn't necessarily expecting is, you know, I have a new friend, somewhere that I can feel safe and not isolated in a really big city.
I would just call you a friend if anybody asked.
Good
me.
Friend.
Yeah, I wouldn't say, oh, I'm her home sharer.
You cannot believe the difference that it makes. Just hearing somebody in the house, and to me now, to hear the key in the lock round about 6 o'clock at night is wonderful.
That was a really quite emotional clip, I think it's fair to say. This was Florence and Alexandra. Florence, who's 95 and has a 27-year-old housemate called Alexandra.
This is an amazing idea.
Isn't it?
The home sharing idea, absolutely. I mean, it helps fight the feelings of loneliness and isolation, and it promotes, you know, connection, intergenerational connection. It must be a fabulous experience for both of them.
It really must. And it sounds like they've become firm friends as well as it being
us,
a practical arrangement.
Yeah, most of us do not no longer live in our country of origin or city where we grew up, so we lose this generational connections to the elderly, I mean, and this
and
is
learning from each other, right?
Absolutely.
Can I ask you, Sabine, what is the purpose of loneliness?
Well, loneliness, as I told you earlier, is one of the primal alarm bells that signals to us that, hold on, there's something not right. I've lost my support. I've lost the aid. I've lost, you know, people who can help me, connection, security, and so on. So in itself, it kind of throws your brain into self-preservation mode, and this self-preservation mode helps you survive, but it's a short-term survival. It's not meant to stay for a long time. So if you're out in the jungle for example, about to be eaten by wild animals, you need to find your tribe for protection and security.
And I think it's very easy to forget that we are, you know, as humans, we're social creatures.
Absolutely. We are wired for connection. We cannot survive on our own. And this is how it's been, even historically and from a developmental perspective, this is how it is. We cannot thrive on our own. We can be on our own for some time, but we cannot really thrive and flourish if you are completely disconnected from our environment.
Can loneliness be genetic?
Genetic, I mean, it's definitely... Because loneliness and aloneness or introversion is quite different. So I can't really say that loneliness is genetic, but personality traits that, you know, are geared towards spending more time alone could be learned from, you know, your parents, from your environment. So it also, you learn a lot from how your parents interacted with others around them.
And with each other, of course.
Of course, absolutely. So it's a lot to say that there is a genetic component to it.
There was a study that showed that people who are prone to loneliness tend to marry other people who are prone to loneliness, and then and vice versa. So those who haven't really experienced it are drawn to others who are kind of a similar emotional makeup, which may well then kind of perpetuate this.
Yes, absolutely. I think here I'm not familiar with the study or research, but I think they're talking about introversion, which is a preference for being alone, like a tendency to be alone.
Because do introverts then perhaps not mind loneliness or
they
as such?
Introverts thrive when they are alone.
So they become energized by being alone.
Yes, they recharge and so on. And they do a lot of, you know, thinking, and it helps them connect to themselves, understand their feelings. This is not to say that they want to be away from other people. They can be, but, you know, they do things probably with moderation. Now, a lot of people energize from being with other people, from getting all this positive feedback, and those are probably the extroverts. So extroverts prefer not to be alone. They prefer to be with company. But we cannot, you know, think of this in terms of what is normal and what is abnormal. It's a matter of preference at the end of the day, you know?
So it would be fair to say that extroverts who are alone or extroverts might be hit more hard by loneliness.
Yes, I think because the loneliness being a subjective experience, extroverts don't have the necessarily probably emotional tools to handle that kind of isolation in an adaptive way, if you want.
How does loneliness affect the brain?
Again, it puts it in this self-preservation mode where it's like a fight, flight, freeze kind of response, because you're wondering, what's happening? Am I going to be alone for a long time? Because I've lost that support system. It's like when you're hungry, you actually search for food to end that feeling of hunger. So in itself, it's adaptive because it sends you a cue that there's something happening. But long term, it could be dangerous, because if you go for a long time, for example, without food, you eventually die or without, you know, fluids, you become dehydrated. So again, loneliness is okay for some time, but not for a long time, the feeling of loneliness. And it's different from aloneness. Being alone is not the same at all.
We're talking about loneliness this afternoon on the couch, and we will be talking later in the show on the impact on your health that loneliness can have. It's On the Couch, and we're talking about loneliness this afternoon. I'm joined by Sabine Scaff, who's the clinical psychologist and co-owner of the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. We've had anonymous text here, Sabine, which I'm going to read out for you.
Sure.
Said, hi, we've been married for 5 years now with a beautiful 2.5-year-old daughter. My wife has approached me saying she wants a divorce as she's still young and living the life of a senior citizen and feels extremely lonely and has built up high insecurity. We've faced some financial difficulties since middle of 2017, but things are improving a bit. I'm 37 and she is 27. She's mentioned that I'm a great husband and father, but it's not what she's looking for. I don't know what to do in this case, and involving any of our families will just make things worse. I thought of giving some distance for a couple of months, but I'm not sure if that's right or not. Please help.
Wow. This also, again, sounds very common in young couples with, you know, children at such a young age. I mean, the demands of parenthood can put a lot of strain and stress on the couple's life. And we hear, I mean, this happens to a lot of people. So it's not an uncommon situation. We get a lot of concerns reported by other couples. The best thing to do, I think, for this family, for this couple, is to consult with a couple's therapist. A couple's therapist will educate them about, you know, which stage they're at, how they can reconnect, what is... It seems that the young mom feels quite isolated as well, you know, spending probably most of her days with the toddler.
And as a mother of a toddler, I can tell you, not easy.
No. Of course not. They're very demanding.
They are.
And cute, and but mostly demanding.
And also talking about the financial difficulty here.
Yeah, I know.
Huge, huge challenge. Yes. Sounds like he really wants this to work.
Yes, I think... He can suggest for them to go into couples therapy. Just, I mean, whether they end up staying together or not is not the aim, but mostly to understand how they have reached that stage and decide, you know, together as partners on how to move forward, I think is very important.
Okay, and keeping that daughter in mind as well, of
course.
Yes,
absolutely. She's very, very young.
Now, we're talking about loneliness this afternoon. I want to talk to you, Sabine, about loneliness in men. Mm. And I was really surprised by this research, actually. More than 1 in 10 men admit to feelings of isolation, but they would prefer to keep to themselves and not tell anyone. This is a survey for the Joe Cox Commission on Loneliness. It was done by the Royal Voluntary Service. So 35% of men feel lonely at least once a week, while 11% it's a daily occurrence. And triggers that cause men to feel lonely include moving away from friends and family, going through a breakup, being unemployed, the death of a family member, which is something we've talked about on the show already this afternoon. The research found that the average age for a man to feel most lonely is 37, with 77% of men of all ages saying they have no friends, and of those that do, nearly 1 in 10, that's 8%, have no close friends. How does loneliness in men tend to kind of manifest, and why does it happen?
I mean, 1 in 10 are admitting to it.
Admitting.
That doesn't mean that it's that low. I mean...
No, I think 35% is the figure of men that experience it, but 1 in 10 are really feeling that stigma and taboo that we're talking
because
about.
Because I think women are more vocal about it. We may not be the lonelier gender, but we admit our need for connectivity more than they do, because men find connections that are quite different than women, you know? So they're more... I mean, young men, 37, they are more career-oriented at that stage and not paying enough attention to relationships, friendships, family ties, and so on. And at a later stage, they realize, oh, hold on, what's going on? I'm very successful, but I'm quite alone and lonely. And we see a lot of clients at this age, you know, seeking for connections when they have not made the time previously to have them happen in their lives.
And had that moment of realization.
Yes, yes.
The similar study showed that men tend to form strong relationships during intense periods of things like at school, during sports or military service. And it's quite interesting to think of men growing up where those connections are formed. You know, in terms of the workplace, I think it's fair to say most women are more open to friendship in the workplace, whereas men will maybe try to keep more of a conservative professional approach.
They spend more time with the boys, doing some sort of activity. It's less about, you know, it's the way that they bond through activity, through doing practical things together. And women talk more than men with one another. I mean, this is how they connect.
I've had a question here on the text line saying, hi, I would like to know, what are the early steps to break out of the loneliness bubble? Thank you.
Okay. Earliest steps, I mean, just recognizing it as a major step, because sometimes we're lonely and we tend to... think that it could be something else when we're just lonely. So acknowledging that is quite helpful to oneself. And then again, I think trying to find a group of people, a support system. I mean, it's not easy. It's easier said than done, of course.
Especially here when you don't know anybody.
Yes.
And, you know, we talk about social media playing a role, both in isolation, but also bringing people together. And I've seen some really quite happy instances of Facebook groups where women have reached out and said, hi, I'm living in this area. I've got a child of this age.
Mommy groups,
is anyone free on a Tuesday afternoon to have a play date?
Yes.
And I've been you know, the cockles have been well and truly warmed by seeing women rushing to the comment section to say, yes, I've got a similar age child, or my kid's a bit older, but we live close by. How about we do X, Y, Z? But I think it's showing vulnerability that can really start to break down that wall and say, yes, I am lonely, or yes, I'm craving connection. What can I do about it? Well, and not to feel like a social pariah saying that you need some people around you.
Again, I mean, misery loves company. So finding out what an area of interest to you and finding out where you can, is there a club that you can join? A lot of people join reading clubs, you know, or some kind of gyms or specific activities that get them together over the weekend, you know, and things that you're passionate about. Those are areas where you can meet people of similar interest and, you know, create this kind of connection with them.
Now, we've been talking about loneliness this afternoon. We've talked a lot about the mental impact of that, but loneliness is also linked to all sorts of physical complications as well. There's increased risk of cardiovascular disease and stroke, progressions of Alzheimer's. One study even found that loneliness can be as much of a long-term risk factor as smoking. In 2015, a huge study, so it was 3.5 million people collected over 35 years at Brigham Young University, found that those of us who fall into categories of loneliness, isolation, or simply even living on their own see their risk of premature death rise from 26% to 36%. It can cause stress, and chronic stress can, as you will know as a clinical psychologist, can cause elevations of stress hormone, cortisol, as well. So some big health impacts there. Inflammation in the body, blood vessels, but there are some conditions that perhaps, or people that might be a bit more prone to loneliness, Sabine, is that right?
Yes, absolutely. First, I mean, there's a strong connection between your mind and your body. So if you're experiencing any kind of struggles on an emotional level and they're not being tackled, your body will show the pain somehow. Okay, it could be, this is what we call psychosomatic manifestation of something that you're not handling emotionally. In terms of loneliness in itself does not, again, cause a specific disorder, but some it's prevalent in specific disorders. So people with, let's say, paranoid personality are more prone to being lonely or to experiencing loneliness.
But is it a bit of a chicken or an egg situation? Do people who have ill health then perhaps more prone to isolating themselves? Or if you have, or are lonely people perhaps less inclined to take care of themselves, and the mentality being, well, if no one cares about me, why should I care about myself?
Yes. I mean, it's complicated. Exactly. It's a vicious circle. And this is why when someone comes in for a therapy, we try to take these things apart and see what has triggered this sense of loneliness first, and we take it step by step with them and try to see what happened first. You know, people, for example, you know, with obsessive compulsive behavior are quite lonely as well, because they're so ashamed and feel so guilty about their behavior that they tend to isolate themselves to be able to, you know, these compulsions, because they don't want to be judged. There's a fear of judgment as well.
We're joined this afternoon by Sabine Scaff, clinical psychologist and co-owner of the Human Relationship Institute and Clinic. And we've had anonymous text, and you can, of course, be completely anonymous, that says, hi, I've been in Dubai for about 4 months living in an apartment. I'm a very keen runner with my daughter in her buggy and need somewhere suitable to run. We had a text in earlier, Sabine. I'm going to read it out again. Hi, I've been in Dubai for about 4 months living in an apartment. I'm a very keen runner with my daughter in her buggy and need somewhere that's suitable. Please help. I'm sad and lonely. Those first few months when you arrive are really hard.
Very hard, especially when you have a child, because you have the responsibility of also engaging them socially. It's not just about you figuring out your, you know, reference points and so on, but also taking care of the well-being of the young child. So it's quite isolating.
I don't know if I can help, but on a very kind of very practical basis, if you are into kind of mummy fitness and running, I know Urban Energy has done buggy runs, fitness in the past, and there was actually just recently a buggy run that took place at the Autodrome. But Urban Energy, and there are also lots of different companies around Dubai where you can take your child and exercise with them, whether they're a baby and they take them into class, or you kind of run together. So do have a look. Or I would even suggest posting something in your community Facebook page, yes, and say, hi, anyone fancy going for a run this evening, or I'm around this time. Mm. And as we said earlier, I think showing that vulnerability and reaching out can really be the first step of making some hopefully meaningful connections. We've had another message on the topic of being a mum in Dubai saying, being a young mum in Dubai, I find it's crippling hard to make friends and talk to strangers. I started a blog, but it's so difficult to attend mum events and start conversations. It is really hard because you feel like everybody's got their own thing going on. Everyone's got their own friends, and why would they want to talk to you? But that can be such a misconception that other people could be far more shy and also feeling really lonely themselves, and you just
and
don't
again,
know it.
I mean, we have to highlight the idea of not wanting to come across as incompetent or weak or vulnerable. So you don't want to show this kind of vulnerability with people that you're not that close to. But then again, it is an isolating approach because you cannot create close bonds if you don't open up initially. And how comfortable are you doing that?
Many employees, and actually half of CEOs, report feeling lonely in their roles. And loneliness has been proven to reduce performance, limit creativity, and even kind of affect things like reasoning and decision making. It's basically imperative that we need to address loneliness across society, but I think the workplace is actually a really, really interesting one because it does tend to be increasing. You know, we're more geographically mobile, we're living further apart from friends and family.
Absolutely.
And then I think also the way we're working has changed so much in the last few years. Yes, it used to be very much coming into the office, you know, sitting there for your, you know, 9 hours or however long it's been, whereas there's new models of working. You can work remotely, you can work freelance, kind of the gig economy of working, doing different jobs at different times it has really changed everything.
But you also spoke earlier about competitiveness. And I think this is, again, competitiveness, appraisal of your performance and so on. And, you know, putting people in this kind of environment where they have to compete, it's like putting rats in a maze where you have to, you know, it's a race and it's a rat race and you have to reach there first. So it really leaves no time for other things to happen. Now, companies, big companies have, you know, taking notice of this, and they're trying to implement the kind of culture that enhances these connections.
And they really need to because, you know, a more connected workforce is going to be more productive, they're going to be more engaged, and there's been all sorts of studies to show about stress and isolation and mental health
and inclusion, inclusion of everyone.
Having that company culture and having happy employees can, I mean, in terms of bottom line, people won't be going to the doctors as much, so their health insurance is going to become more reasonable.
Yes.
And there's a lot to be said for improving the company culture within a company. Now, Vivek Murthy is the former Surgeon General, and he's written in the Harvard Business Review. We would just like to play a clip from him. He's talking about the crisis of loneliness and the rising number of people who feel lonely. And here he is talking about technology's role in what he calls an epidemic, and why the culture of masculinity might be putting more men at risk of feeling lonely.
Well, we are recognizing that loneliness is a lot more prevalent than we thought it was, but the data is also showing that there are more adults who admit to being lonely now than just two decades ago. And there are several possible reasons for this. Number one, people are more mobile now than they ever have been. People move away from their communities and their home. There are record numbers of people who are actually living alone. But we also know that technology has had a potential role here. Technology can help or hurt. It's simply a tool. But for too many people, technology has led to substituting online connections for offline in-person connections. And ultimately, I think that has been harmful. Spending time on Facebook or on other social media thinking that that is equivalent to sitting down and seeing a friend and talking to them face-to-face. We have reason to believe that men may be more at risk in some ways for loneliness. And some of this has to do with our culture around masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we think that masculinity is tied to being self-sufficient and not expressing your emotions and certainly not admitting to feelings of loneliness. But many men do feel lonely, especially after they get married or have children where their social circles narrow. Women are much better at keeping their connections in life than men are. It turns out that loneliness is associated with a reduction in your lifespan that is as severe as the reduction in lifespan that you see with smoking, 15 cigarettes a day. It's greater than the impact on mortality of obesity. And part of this is because that loneliness actually places us in a stress state. We evolved to be social creatures. And thousands of years ago, if you were connected to other people, you were more likely to have a stable food supply and to be protected from predators. So when you're disconnected, you're in a stress state. When that happens chronically, it can have a profound impact on your health.
That was Vivek Murthy, who's the former Surgeon General in the US, talking about technology and also the role of masculinity when it comes to loneliness. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, we can't talk about loneliness and isolation with talking about social media. And as Vivek Murthy said there, it's very easy to sit on your device and feel like you're interacting with people, but not actually having any meaningful connection at all.
Not at all. It's a virtual connection, but unfortunately, I mean, we see a lot with the young generation that face-to-face, you know, connection has become so scarce because of the online connection that they seek and that they value. Right now, I mean, I have a 13-year-old who always worries about how many likes she got. And for them, you know, it's a make it or break it type of a behavior, because there's always this anxiety. Am I popular? Am I accepted? Am I integrated? And so on. And for the older, I mean, for the millennials who are a bit older than teenagers, I mean, this is how they get that kind of validation. They feel that if they have 1,000 or more of followers and friends, there's even an app where you can buy fake friends and increase. Absolutely.
As it's radio, so you can't see my face, but I just get appalled by that.
On Instagram, where you can buy fake people, fake accounts, and increase your followers. I mean, this is true. I mean, this is how digital behavior is, and it kind of tricks us. It tricks us because it is an illusion. And this is where the danger is, because you feel you are connected when actually you are not.
It's On the Couch, and we're talking about loneliness this afternoon. What is loneliness, and why do we feel it? Why do some people feel lonely when surrounded by people, and others never feel lonely at all? At some point in our lives, you or I, probably both of us, will feel lonely. It's not the same as being alone, which is fine, and speaking truthfully, it's often a relief to get away from people sometimes. It's that feeling, and often a physical feeling, of not having anyone to talk to or anyone who understands you. We can be surrounded by people, by friends, family, colleagues. We can live in a busy city or a busy home and still feel very lonely or isolated. I'm joined in the studio this afternoon by Sabine Scaff, who's a clinical psychologist and co-owner of the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. Thank you, Sabine. The studies are really quite staggering. Around 52% of parents have had a problem with loneliness, and almost a quarter of them have felt lonely in the past week. 50% of people with disabilities will be lonely on any given day. And for 3.6 million people over the age of 65 in the UK, television is their main form of company. I've done a deeply unscientific poll myself through the power of Instagram stories this morning.
Okay.
And I asked first, have you ever felt lonely? 95% of people. Oh. So this was about 400 people got back in touch. And then I said, do you feel the UAE is a lonely place? And 72% of people said yes. And I think that just touches on what we talked about earlier, about being far away from family and friends that we've probably grown up with for so long.
Yes.
And meeting people here and perhaps not being able to forge meaningful connections because we're reluctant to, because of that kind of transient nature of expat life, but also perhaps a bit of self-preservation that I don't really want to become close to somebody because I know they're not going to be here for much longer. Luca has been in touch saying, I feel that social media has separated us more than made us closer. I remember when Facebook and similar came up, I was excited because I could stay in touch with friends and family being an expat. Mm. Today, it feels like everything rotates around the digital success. And at a point, I find myself fighting over digital validation when I'm actually on the phone with the same person. It's grotesque. And let's not forget that privacy has become a destroyed value too. I've become a slave to myself, and the beauty of this original idea has faded big time.
And this is so beautifully written, and from, you know, there's a lot of contradictory feelings around social media, whether it kind of connects us or creates more disconnect. There's an amazing movie, by the way, that is called Disconnect, and that highlights the negative outcomes of being addicted on social media. And it's quite unclear whether social media causes loneliness or whether it's just that already lonely people are more likely to spend longer time on social networks, and that in an attempt to feel less lonely.
I think also it can be a distraction from loneliness.
Yes, absolutely.
So as much as people might use food or alcohol or television or, you know, or whatever to yes, not sit with that feeling.
I came across this concept of social snacking.
Snacking? What's that?
It's like when you're browsing through other people's profiles and reading other people's comments without making any of your own.
So lurking, I would call that.
Yes, yes. It's like it may feel like you're socially engaged with them while you're doing it, and you might temporarily forget your loneliness for some time, but then when you stop it, what happens is that you feel lonely again. But on top of that, you are now victim to social comparison. So which makes you feel even more isolated.
Oh, so like, look at her amazing body after giving birth, or look at his fantastic holiday or new car and
yes, absolutely.
All of that.
And it's well,
or going
well,
out.
Well said. I mean, the last person who intervened said it quite beautifully.
I think, you know, we all love our phones and technology, but it's not going to give you a hug at night.
No.
I'm a big hugger. It's practically on my CV for hugging skills. But I think we all need to be hugged, and having that physical connection. Yes. There's a huge number of research and studies that show both in children the importance of growth and development for that physical touch, but also in the elderly. And we've got the clip here from Ruth Brooks, who's talking about getting older and the loneliness she's felt since her husband died. But what Ruth misses most is the physical and emotional feeling you get from getting a hug from a partner. Listen to this.
I have a need, as I think most people really do, although it's perhaps not always expressed, to be doing something. And of course the fact that I live alone, my husband having died some years ago, makes that even more important. We all need to be held. Somehow it's as if older people are no longer in this world where people hold each other together, sustain each other. And I think this sense of loneliness that comes from that is one of the worst things of getting older. I think a physical hug, especially with someone who you've been with for a long time, is a sort of affirmation, isn't it? It means you're important, I'm here for you. That's one of the great losses, of course, of getting older that many of us have to bear. It's both physical and emotional. Makes you feel held, if you like, feeling safe.
That was Ruth Brooks talking about the importance of a hug. And we're talking this afternoon about loneliness and how social media can play a role both in connecting us. You know, we've never had Wi-Fi connections so strong, but maybe our real connections with people are getting weaker. I'm joined this afternoon by Sabine from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. We understand there's a lot of stigma attached to loneliness, and this is why we're really talking about it this afternoon, to get that conversation out in the open. But of course, if you would prefer to be anonymous, get in touch and we can make that happen. Or if you've got concerns about any family or friends, we've actually had a message come in anonymously talking about her daughter, saying, "My daughter is lonely and it breaks my heart that I have to keep telling her that her peers are busy and can't play. She's 7, she's shy, sweet-natured, soft-spoken child who's had developmental delays and therefore struggles to keep up with her peers. Please help, it's really worrying me."
This is so sad. I mean, maybe the mother can find some groups of children with similar difficulties. I'm sure there are some support groups that can help with that. Or maybe find some friends of similar age whose families are more open to, taking this child in. I mean, it's very, very distressing for the mother, I'm sure. Or create play dates with her friends from school. One-on-one, I think, is best at this stage, and not overwhelm her with, a big group of friends. Just one-on-one to see, to assess her comfort level, and then take it from there.
Okay, I hope that helps. So now, we've had lots of messages this afternoon about the loneliness of parenting. And actually, a study showed in the UK recently, over half of parents, 52%, have had a problem with loneliness, and almost a quarter of them have felt lonely in the last week. This was something I could really, really identify with, especially just, you know, after I'd given birth, not feeling like anybody understood what I was going through. My husband would come home from work. I remember a particularly dark day. I think I was sitting in a deck chair in the garden with the baby, watching Jimmy Kimmel clips on my phone, just crying. Mm-hmm. And it was so hard to articulate what I was going through,
yes,
that emotional, hormonal fallout.
Yeah.
But I think all you really want at that time is your mum, really, a lot of the time.
Absolutely.
You really do. You just want a big hug from your mum.
Yes.
But I think we've talked about loneliness being a temporary state.
Mm.
And it can serve us in some ways to hopefully try and change some behaviours in terms of that visceral feeling of something's not quite right here.
Yes.
I'm feeling isolated. I need to make some changes. But the loneliness of parenting, I think, is a very unique kind of feeling, actually, because it's very parenting's very competitive, whether we admit it or not.
Yes.
We're all looking at the milestones of other people's children.
Mm.
We're all looking at, you know, the holidays that they have, the, you know, the buggies that they have. And it's very hard to not make that comparison.
And we're all wondering if we're doing the right thing.
No one knows if they're doing the right thing. We
yeah,
can go
absolutely.
To all the experts in the world. And children change all the time. You think, you know, you crack the sleep and then something changes. You feel like children are a mystery that need to be solved, and perhaps everybody else has got more clues than you.
This is very untrue, you know. We forget that children have their own temperament, and we try to make them fit into specific boxes because this is what the book said. But then in return, if this does not happen, it makes us feel like not good enough parents. You know, there's this idea that we need to be perfect parents for our children, which has, you know, made us feel quite like failures as parents. When I always tell, you know, clients, you have to feel like a good enough parent for this specific child. Because for parents with more children, we see that a specific approach may work with one child, but not with another. So it's like trial and error on the go, 24/7, to try and figure out, you know, what helps. I mean, a good parent is a compassionate parent, you know, and that is willing to question their ways and to adapt to the child's needs, I believe. But yes, it is very isolating.
It is. It's hugely isolating. So to anyone out there, it's who think that everybody's getting on better than you
absolutely
are.
Not.
They're not.
But they're posting that.
Of course they are.
They're not going to post a picture of them crying.
I do that sometimes.
Oh, okay.
My most liked photo.
At least you're genuine.
Oh, I am. I can't help it. I'm too tired to do anything else. But my most liked photo on Instagram of the whole of last year was my toddler on the floor having a tantrum during my baby's christening in front of everybody. I'll show you later. It's gold. It was mortifying at the time. But it was gold. Just to say a little thank you to John, who got in touch to say, this show has brought intelligence, sensitivity and depth to my lunchtime listening. By the way, I don't have a single social media account. WhatsApp doesn't count. And I'm completely happy. Just don't care. Thank you for that, John. I think maybe that is going to be the key to happiness in the future.
Maybe.
I'm joined this afternoon by Sabine from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. And you've brought in a quote, Sabine, that I'm going to read out that really
Very
got
powerful.
Me.
Yeah.
Talking about loneliness, and the quote says, the capacity to be alone is the capacity to love. It may look paradoxical to you, but it is not. It is an existential truth. Only those people who are capable of being alone are capable of love, of sharing, of going into the deepest core of the other person without possessing the other, without becoming dependent on the other, without reducing the other to a thing, or without becoming addicted to the other.
It sums it up quite nicely.
I had to read it a few times. I'm not going to lie, Sabine. It's deep. It's deep for a Wednesday.
Yeah.
But we're talking about the topic of loneliness
and
how universal it is.
And this is the capacity to be alone, which is different from the capacity of tolerating your loneliness.
Can I just say, I lived on my own for a time before I got married, and I was really nervous about it. Really nervous.
Yes.
I was moving out of a great shared apartment with two really good friends, and it, you know, blah blah blah. And I moved into this studio, and I just thought, this place is going to be a prison or a sanctuary.
Oh.
And it was the happiest time I've ever had. It was brilliant. So,
you know, let me just highlight this. I mean, the idea of resilience is quite powerful in fighting loneliness. How resilient are we when we are confronted with difficulty? How can we overcome such difficulties, such as loneliness, you know? And I think having this kind of resilience helps a lot in dealing with difficult situations. And enhancing resilience in people who come in for therapy and highlighting that each one of us is resilient, let's figure out how to make you more resilient in this adverse situation, is quite helpful.
And, you know, we've talked a lot this afternoon about the emotional impact of loneliness and the health impact of loneliness and how it really has become an epidemic. Mother Teresa had an interesting quote that says, "The greatest disease in the West today is not TB or leprosy. It is being unwanted, unloved, uncared for. We can cure physical diseases with medicine, but only the only cure for loneliness, despair, and hopelessness is love. There are many in the world who are dying for a piece of bread, but there are many more dying for a little love. The poverty in the West is a different kind of poverty."
Yes, absolutely.
But what good can come from loneliness, Sabine?
Loneliness, I mean, is a time where you can reflect on the feelings that you're experiencing. I mean, it's more a time of reflection. I know it's scary because you want that feeling to go away. So you do whatever necessary, sometimes in desperate attempts, you know, to stop that feeling, because loneliness implies loss as well. And it's scary because you don't want to experience it. But sometimes to take that time to reflect on a specific situation or the feeling is very, very, very helpful. That's why you ask angry people not to react, but rather than to withdraw and then think about that feeling and what it means to them and what caused it and so on before going, you know, into an anger outburst is, you know, quite helpful.
And it can be a signal to us, and often as a physical symptom, as you said, it can be compared to hunger,
absolutely.
A kind of a need to look for new friends or new experiences, or to improve existing relationships as well, to look inside and see what we need. And we can't ignore those feelings.
Absolutely not. Again, I mean, when it's short term, when we live it for, it's a short term signal to let us know that something is not quite right. It's adaptive in a way, in that sense. It's only when it becomes long-term that it can cause a lot of, you know, emotional harm to us.
And it's something that's being taken very seriously worldwide. Earlier in the year, the UK appointed a UK Minister of Loneliness, which I think is a really important acknowledgement of what a crisis the UK is in terms of loneliness. And they're obviously specifically looking at the elderly as well and the impact of loneliness and bringing communities together. We heard earlier about that fantastic scheme in the UK of partnering the elderly with a student, the elderly person who has issues of loneliness, isolation, lack of physical touch, lack of connection, and the student who on a very practical basis is just looking for somewhere to live. But the beautiful stories coming out of that are those of friendship and true connection and learning between the generations. I really enjoyed this afternoon's been. Thank you so much for joining
thank
us.
You.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.